Today's daf in the Sechet Makot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Zion, and we're holding at the Mishnah near the top of the daf. Mishnig Mardino Barach. So a guy was already in the Besdin. They listened to the whole case. They paskin that he is to be executed. They're taking him out to kill him, and the guy manages to escape with a daring helicopter raid. Unbelievable. Anyway, they managed to capture this guy again, bring him back to the same Besdin. Ein sotrin et dino. We don't have to take any other things into consideration. It's the din was finished, and we just carry out the execution. In fact, komakom sheyamdu shnayim v'yomru meidim anu bishploni shenigmar dino bebeit din shel ploni uploni uploni edav areze yareg. It doesn't even have to be in the same Besdin. If we have two witnesses that are coming along and they say that we saw such a person being paskined in such and such a Besdin, that he was supposed to be executed, and it was on the basis of Ploni Uploni, who were his witnesses, so all of the information is here, that's enough. On that basis, you can actually go ahead and kill him, because he was already paskined that he was chayev le'areg. Sanhedrin noheget ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. Now, the din of Sanhedrin is both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. Furthermore, once we're wrapping up the inyanim of the Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin ha'oreget achat b'shavua, nikret chavlanit. If a Besdin actually carries out an execution once, even in 7 years, they are called a violent Sanhedrin. They're chablanim. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria omer, what do you mean once in 7 years? It's once in 70 years that we have to think about. Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, Omrim. That's not clear whether Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria means cross out 7 and make it 70, or whether Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria is saying the norm for a Besdin would be once in 70 years, but not that if it is once in 70 years, it's already Chavlanit. We'll see, the Gemara will ask this question. Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, Omrim. I'll tell you one thing. If we were to be in Sanhedrin, nobody would ever be killed. Said Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, in that event, af heim marbim shofchei damim b'Yisrael. They would be the cause of additional murders and awful things going on, because if they would never be mechayev misa, then we would never have any value to that chiyev misa. Now, this sounds like it's talking about the fact that the, what do they call that? I'm telling you my words. When the effect on the criminals, what is it called? They're afraid of being...
Deterrence.
Yes, thank you. This is mashma, but it's deterrence that we're talking about. But that is a mistake, because there is no need for deterrence, since l'maisa, it's easy for a person to get out of a chiyuv misa. And, I mean, remember, in order to be mechayev someone misa, I mean, you've got to actually have hasra, and he has to be mekabel hasra, and so on. I mean, a deterrence, we're talking about once in 70 years, this is a deterrence, not to mention the fact that if a crook thought that he was going to be caught, anything is a deterrence. If he thought that he was gonna be fined $1,000, it's a deterrence. If he thought that he was gonna get a year in jail, it would be a deterrence. There's no difference in terms of the deterrence. Obviously, the person is able to ignore the fact that there's a deterrence. But the point of din is not the deterrence that comes from the fear of carrying out the din. It's the awe of the din, the yira of Besdin, in terms of defining what is worth killing for, not what you actually get killed for. The moment that you say, well, we're going to kill somebody just for committing adultery, you have essentially canceled marriage. That's no longer important. If there's a concept of Misa that's associated with it, it completely changes the way people look at the whole thing. And because of that, it becomes inconceivable. But not because of the direct deterrence that I will be caught. Anybody who's doing something is doing it assuming he won't be caught. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The Mishnah is a complete self-contradiction. It starts off by saying, if the guy comes to the same Bezdin, then we don't have to start over and we can carry out the Misa, which implies that if it would be in front of another Bezdin, that we would have to start over again. And then you say, wherever two witnesses come and establish that this person indeed was found guilty and was paskin that he's going to be killed in a different Bezdin, you can simply go ahead and not reopen the case in any other Bezdin. So, Hatani Sefer, Komakom, any place, not even the same place, Shiamdu Shnai, Viamru Meidim Anuatish Ploni Shadig Mardina Vibetino Shaploni Ploni Ploni Eda, Areza Neirak. So that means we never demand retrial. Forget about it. The same courtroom. Amra Bayelo Kasha, the Mishnah, which you thought the last part of the Mishnah that says that Sanhedrin is noheges ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz, you thought that that was a completely different point. It had nothing to do with the first point. Wrong. The contradiction in the Mishnah is specifically addressing that issue. The first part of the Mishnah was referring to an Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in such a case, if he comes to Eretz Yisrael, then he would, in fact, need to be seiser the din. Masha'en came where the Mishnah says that you can just continue and assume that the din is still correct. That's talking about in Chutz La'aretz. And I'll prove it to you. To Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda bar Distoy, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach. If a person escapes and he goes from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, and he comes there in front of a Bezdin, and the Edim say, he was already chayev misa in Eretz Yisrael. Then ein sotri netino. But if he ran away to Eretz Yisrael, then we are sotri netino. Why? Because chusa shel Eretz Yisrael, since there is a mitzvah of the v'yitzilu ha'eda, so then if he's now in Eretz Yisrael, there's a chance that the additional avira the Eretz Yisrael and the schus of being an Eretz Yisrael will actually provide a moker for the Dayanim to understand that he needs to be looked at again afresh. And therefore, it could be we'd be able to save him. Sanhedrin Noheget, and therefore we have afterwards, the Mishnah says the Din of Sanhedrin is in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. But, okay, there's obviously going to be some difference, as we'll see. Because what's the mocker for saying that it's going to be in Chutz La'aretz? The Tanna Rabbanan. V'hayu eile lachem l'chukat mishpat l'dorotechem. Unfortunately, the Gemara left out the main part of the pasuk, which often happens. B'chol moshvotechem. So since the pasuk ends b'chol moshvotechem, it means that even if you're in Chutz La'aretz, l'madnu, the Sanhedrin shenoheget b'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. So then, wait a second. So we have so many times where it says in the pasuk davka bishorecha shoftim v'shotrim titein l'chol b'chol shorecha is the ikra mitzvah of Sanhedrin. So how can we say that b'chol shorecha shorim is only shorecha is a Eretz Yisrael? Ah, because that's true. There is a difference. The Bisharecha, where we have a diak in the pasuk there in Shoftim, Atamoshiv bate dinim b'chol belach u'felach u'v'chol ir v'ir. So if it's in Eretz Yisrael, you need to have a complete web that covers every last place that is shayach, has 120 people, as we'll see, that or we saw actually in the Sugyan Sanhedrin. If it has 120 people, so then it has to be part of that web. So the coverage of din has to be everywhere. By chutz la'aretz, you need access to din, but you don't have coverage for din. So it's like the early Wi-Fi systems. You know, you want the Wi-Fi, you got to go into this living room. You can't be in the kitchen. But the mesh of din, that is something that is only true in Eretz Yisrael, because it now becomes a heftza of living within that mesh as opposed to having access to that mesh. So therefore, im kein lama nemar, lama tamadomre b'sharecha, b'sharecha tamoshiv batek dinim b'chol pelech u'felech, u'vchol ir v'ir, u'vchutz varetz tamoshiv b'chol pelech v'felech, but there's no need yet tamoshiv b'chol ir v'ir. Now, we had the machlokas between Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah about whether it's once in 70 years and the Tanakhama, that it's once in 7 years. It's Nikris Chavlonit, Iboilo. When Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah said once in 70 years, did he mean it's not once in 7 years, guys, it's once in 70 years? So in other words, if the Beis Din would actually kill once in 70 years, it would be called a Chavlonit. Or did Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah come to say a different thing? You say if it kills once in 7 years, which is mashma, that once in 8 years, once in 9 years, that's normal. That's not normal. Only once in 70 years is acceptable. In which case, if it does kill once in 70 years, it's not considered to be choblanit. Take Rebbe Tarfon, Rebbe Akiva, Amrim, Ilu, Ayinu, B'Sanhedrin, no one would ever die. How can they possibly do that? I mean, what do you mean no one would ever die? I mean, what legal procedure would make it that no one would ever die? So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar explained the Mishnah that they would ask questions that are impossible to answer. And the Edom would say, we don't know. And because of that, we wouldn't be able to bring them to Chiyuv of Misa. Let's say, they'll ask, did you see whether the guy who was the victim over here was a trefa or shalem? Well, I mean, did you do a post-mortem on him? And now you saw that he was a completely healthy person and that therefore we should kill this guy. No, you don't know how to do post-mortems? Oh, gee, well, we can't accept your testimony. Sorry. See you some other time. And what about if they say, yes, actually, we're both qualified pathologists, and we actually did do a post-mortem? Oh, my Rav Ashi, well, even if they say that, im timtzo lanu sholem have, you could ask them, are you quite certain that where the bullet entered his lung, there wasn't a tiny hole in the lung before? Well, I mean, I know we can't. Well, sorry, boys, some other time. So we'll stop that also. So ultimately, we can always be sure that we ask some kind of question that would enable us to actually confuse the Edom, and they would puzzle themselves. Well, what about a case where somebody is coming to be chayiv misa because he's boela ta'erava? So what would they do over there? Well, abayiv ravadam retavayo, they would say, well, listen here, gentlemen, you say that you witnessed this intercourse. Now, I'm assuming that that means that you got a good look at this guy's penis, you watched it exactly where it was, you saw the insertion, and, well, no, of course not. I mean, how the heck were we supposed to see that? Come on. Well, sorry, boys. So Re'itim can be cholbish wafer. Mikholbish wafer is a euphemism in which the eye applicator is stuck into the tube of the eye shadow, right? So that is the same as intercourse. So if they obviously are not going to be able to say, yes, we got a good look at that. So I understand that, you know, that is a good point. I mean, how do they actually ever say we witness two people having intercourse? How do they know that they were actually having intercourse? V'rabbonin echi dainen. So let's say those who argue with Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva. Isn't that an issue? No. Because they would say, look, all of these things are the basis of a psak is norms. So it's k'shmuel, domer shmuel. If we're talking about a case of adultery. So, mishi yera ukim and afim. Look, these two people are sure look like they are involved in sexual intercourse. I mean, we don't have to have all the details. That's the way that people having intercourse look. And that is enough for us to actually be mechayev v'misa. So it's only when the question is asked and the Edom cannot respond that they know, at that point, it destroys the testimony. Hadron Allah, Ketzad Ha'edim. There we go. Before we begin the Halakha Perek, I'd like you to take out your Chamisha Chumshei Torah, or if you're the type that always uses a Sefer Torah, you can take out your Sefer Torah and we'll wait for you to roll. I'd like you to take a look at the various parshias that we have in the Torah that describe the inyan of the Galut. Let me just get a Kleenex. Sorry. So let's start with the Pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim, which is just very brief. Bakeh ish vameit, this is in Chof Aleph Yud Beit. Bakeh ish vameit mot yumat, vasher lo tzada, v'Elohim ina liyado, v'samti lecha makom asher yonus shama. So this was the famous Pasuk about Mirushoyim Yetziresha. In the event that someone, it says, Elohim inali yado, as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu unfairly brought him into a matzav in which he committed a murder unwittingly. So then, v'samti lecha makom asher yanus shama, I'm going to create a place where you're going to be able to be saved from the Gol Adam and from dinim. So that is adding that even in the Midbar, this was way before the Knesset Eretz Yisrael and even the mitzvot about Knesset Eretz Yisrael. So we learn from there that Machan Alevia was actually collate during the time of the Midbar as well. But meanwhile, there's an idea that's introduced right away together with the Chiyav of Misa. And we're going to see at the later on in the Perek that actually all murderers, whether it was a mezid or whether it was a shogeg, immediately go to an Ir Miklat. Then the Bezdin takes them from the Ir Miklat, paskins the din, and in the event that they're chayev golus, will send them back to the Ir Miklat. And otherwise, will carry out the din as required. So this was our first parasha, and it introduces the element of the klita, the idea of the fact that it's possible for there to be a place of protection. Okay, then we have a more complex parasha. Just get in. And this is in Shoftim, which is Dvarim Yudet. And we could start at the beginning. Ki yachrit Adonai Elohecha tagoyim asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha et arzam v'irishtam v'yashavta v'orehem v'vatehem. Shalosh arim tavdilach betoch arzecha asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha l'rishta. So now this is shalosh arim. The reason that it only mentions Shalosh Arim here is because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had already been mafrish when they were, even though it didn't work as yet, as we'll see in the Mishnah, but when we were still in Eivor HaYarden, so there were originally already at the time of the Chalukah with the 42 Arei Aleviim and the future, there was going to be in that area three Arei Miklat. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, Mitzvah Bo LeYodi, I'm going to do it. And he took advantage of his opportunity, despite the fact that it was too early for them to actually function as Arei Miklat. He set aside three Arim. So this is the mitzvah, to set aside another Shalosh Arim betoch Arzecha, which is on the other side of the Yarden, after the Knesset Haaretz. So here we have a number of details that we didn't see at all before. First of all, Tachin Lecha HaDerech turns out to be an incredible mitzvah. in which the Besdin is responsible to build a series of superhighways that allow people access, immediate access from wherever they are, to the nearest or Ir Miklat, with a whole set of signs, every kilometer, signs where to go, where it is, and so on. And then Vishilashta et Gvul Artzecha, this is tells me that these roads and the cities have to be staggered evenly across Eretz Yisrael, so that everybody will be within range of an Ir Miklat. So that is a whole new chelik of the mitzvah, that you have to be mechin haderach. Now this is what this is all about. That's the simple meaning of this pasuk. As we'll see later in the Mishnah, Zedvar Rotzeach tells me more than just the introduction. Now here's what it's all about, but rather that a Rotzeach has got to make it clear to people on his own that he is a Rotzeach. And therefore, if they want to be mechabed him in the place that he comes to, he has to tell them, Rotzeach ani. Asher yakeh et re'ehu bivli da'at, v'hu lo soneh lo mitmol shishon. So this is someone who kills his friend without intent. There's no record of any kind of altercations or anger or any kind of feud between them. V'asher yavo et re'ehu v'ya'ar lachtov etzim, and a person who came, and his friend was also in the same place, into a forest in order to chop down trees. Minitcha yado v'garzen lichrot ha'etz, and there he was about to use his hatchet, and he was going to cut this tree, and then what happened was, now this is not clear, we're going to see it's a machlokas in the Mishnah, what happened was either the barzel, meaning the metal head of the axe, flew off of the tree, or it means the metal head of the axe caused a branch of the tree or a splinter from the tree to hit this other guy in the head and kill him. Matzat Rav Ehu Vomait, Hu Yanus Alachat Arima Ela V'choy, he can go to one of those cities. Why must he run there? Pen Yerdovko Ela Dama Charei Rotzeach, Ki Yecham Levavo, V'Yisigo, Ki Yerbe HaDerech V'Yiko Nafesh, because we're afraid that maybe one of the relatives will be chasing after the person who murdered his loved one, and he will not be entirely to blame for this because he's emotionally distraught. He may catch this guy if it's difficult to get to an Ir Miklat. And the fact is, velo ein mishpat mavet, he is not supposed to be killed because he didn't do this on purpose. Ki lo sonehu lo mitmo shilshon. That's very odd that it keeps saying that he didn't hate him before this, as if that's the issue. I mean, the issue is the intent, not the hatred. And we're going to see what we learn from there, machlokes, in the Mishnah later. Al kena nochi mitzavecha lemar, shalosh harim tavdilak. And that's why I'm telling you to set aside these additional three cities. And as a matter of fact, im yarchiv Adonai Elohecha givulcha kasher nishba lavotecha, v'natan lecha et kol ha'aretz asher diber letet lavotecha, if you're zeicha in the end to have a much larger Eretz Yisrael, and you'll be zeicha to all of the 10 different amim that were originally promised Avram Avinu, then you have to go ahead and be mosif yet another set of these cities. V'yasafta lecha od shalosh arim al hashalosh ha'ela. V'lo yishafech dam naki bekerav artzecha, and this way there won't be blood, innocent blood, that is spilled in your land. V'chiyeh ish soneh l're'ehu v'arav lo v'kama lo v'iko nefesh, and even if somebody does hate his friend, lay in wait for him and kill them, and he dies, he should also run to one of these cities immediately. And then v'shochu zikneh ro v'lokhu oto misham v'natnu oto b'yad gorel adam v'mit. Lo tachos einecha elav uv'yarta dam hanakim Yisrael v'tov lav. Now, surprisingly, the next parashot that we have are the sugyas that we just finished. which is the lo yakume erechad beish, the cholavon or cholchatat, the cholcheta sheyecheta. This pasuk sound familiar from yesterday? Al pishnei edim or al pishlosha edim, yakum davar. And then we have another interesting parsha, which is the parsha of Edim Zomimim. Wow, that's interesting. So Edim Zomimim are directly related to this parsha of Galut, of all strange things. And in fact, of course, our Masechta is built around that relationship. So we started off with the idea of Edim Zomimim. We used the opening mission of Edim Zomimim, a reference to Shulchayev Galut, which we could have used other references because we have four cases in total that are not the Kiyum of Kasher Zoma. And it goes on to say, V'yamdu shnei anashim, asher lemariv lifnei Adonai, lifnei hakohanim v'ashoftim, asher yiyu b'yamim ahim, v'doshu ashoftim heitev, v'hinei eid sheker ha'eid sheker anav v'achiv, v'asitem lo kasher zomam, v'asot l'achiv, u'v'yarta hara mikirbechas. So the inyan of our Masechet, the inyanim of our Masechet, are strangely related and put together as if there's some connection between these sugyas. And in fact, our Gemara insists that there is some kind of fundamental connection. So what we're talking about over here is therefore the second part of our Masechta is about Elohim HaGolim. Now we also have the parasha, which we have to take a look in Bamidbar. If you therefore turn to Sefer Bamidbar at the end, what we're talking about in Mas'eh, and there we have, let me just look up what the number of the pasuk is, make it easier for you. This is Lamed He, Perek Lamed He, and it begins in Pusik. Yud Gimel. Well, actually, Yud Beis, I think we should start. Nope, we should start before. Let's start at the beginning in Shishi, which is Pusik Tet. So there it says, in Masei, Vayidaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Tabreu b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta layem ki atem uvrim et ha-yardin aretz ha-kinoan v'hikritem lachem orim orim miklat yena lachem v'nas shama rotseach mate nefesh b'shkaga v'hayu lachem ha-arim l'miklat migo'el v'lo yamut ha-rotseach ad omdo lifnei ha-ida v'mishpat. So here it's Merames already that we're even talking about a rotseach b'mezid who has to be there until the Bezdin determines that he's chayev. Ya'arim ashetitenu, shesh arim miklati yena lachem. This was, of course, before Moshe Rabbeinu took off the three. So et shalosh arim titnu me'ever le'arden, et shalosh arim titnu be'eretz kenan, arim miklati yena. Now, all of these psukim are going to be referenced in detail in this perek. Livnei Yisrael v'lager v'latoshav betocham tiyena shesh arim ha'el le'miklat, Lanus shama kol makei nefesh b'shkaga. And then we start talking about what was the instrument of the murder. Now, some of these psukim we've already explained in Sanhedrin, which we've seen is the introduction to Makot, actually, in terms of the din of Ritzicha. So, im bekli barzel ikov yomot rotzeachu, im be'even yad asher yomot ikov yomot rotzeachu, o bekli eitz asher yomot bo ikov yomot. This introduces the concept of a goel adam who yamit et harotzeach bepigo bo yamiteno. Now, what about in bepeta belo eva hadafo? How about if suddenly, without any history of altercation between them, he actually hits this guy, o ishlich alav kol kli, or he throws something without intent, belo tzdia? He wasn't waiting for this guy. He didn't realize he was there. O b'chol even asher yamutba b'lo ra'ot, or he doesn't see that the person is there. Vayapel alav. This word vayapel alav is going to be critical to the Mishnah now. Vayapel alav vayamot. If it falls on him through this other person, v'hu lo yevlo v'lo mevakesh ra'ato, Again, it's a question of, do we have any history of anger between them? Veshaftu ha'eda bein ha'makeh u'bein goel adam al ha'mishpatim ha'ele. And here is exactly where the Torah tells us, v'hitzilu ha'eda, which of course is the moker of even the size of the Bezdin of Esther Kishlosha, as we saw back in Sanhedrin. We have the Eda is supposed to be Matzil, v'hitzilu ha'eda. The Eda is supposed to also be v'shaftu ha'eda, and the Eda is 10, and that equals 20, and so on. These were all of the Inyonim that we finished in Sanhedrin. And now, this person is put into that city. Veshivu otov, he's found to have been a shogeg. Veshivu oto edal ir miklato asher nas shama. So he goes back to that original town that he had run to immediately upon the murder's occurrence, and he has to stay there, settle down there. Veyashav ba admot ha-kohen ha-gadol asher bashach oto b'shebna kodesh, until the Kohen Gadol dies. And if he leaves that town, Im yatzo yetzeh ha-rotzeach et gvul ir miklato asher yanuz shama, the moment he goes out of town, and we'll see going out of town includes the tchum of the town, umatza oto goel adam michutz legvul ir miklato, and then the goel adam is ratzach et ha-rotzeach, ein lo da. There is no iser, some learn there's even a mitzvah, we'll see that some achorkes later on, ki bi'ir miklato yeshev, he must stay in that city, ad mot ha-kohen gadol, and only acharei mot ha-kohen ha-gadol, yeshuv ha-rotzeach el eretz achuzato. Okay, so basically, we've got three separate parashios, each of which stresses a different element of the inyan of galus. Here, in Maaseh, we learned that the point is ve'yapel alav. We're talking about what exactly was the instrument. Now, because of the fact that there are so many different levels of what is considered to be intent, what is considered not to be intent, so we could have negligence, we can have total and absolute shock that such a thing could happen, which is called an onus. So this is not just accidental. It's completely unexpected. We can have gross negligence, which is korov to an actual mesid, in which there was a good chance something was going to happen, but you couldn't predict it completely. And then we have this other aspect of planning or non-planning, the relationships between the people. Do you see a connection between that element of Ir Miklat and the Edim Zomenim, in which we have a concept of Vasitin lo kasher zamam lasot re'eu? These are the only two parshiyos where the question of the extent of the planning and what it was that the relationship between the two are comes to define the actual din. In that sense, this is a completely unique element, and it's actually the two places where you do not need hatra'ah by definition. And therefore, there is a very deep connection between them. It's not surprising that to find the two places in the Torah where the relationship and the extent of the awareness of the other person and the intent either to protect or to harm are central, are put together next to each other in the Torah and in the opening Mishnah of our Masechet and in the first two Prakim of the Masechet that introduce the relationship between Edim Zomimim and Eluhein Hagolim. So let us begin now with that introduction with a little bit more of an awareness of how these sugyas are interrelated under the surface. Let us begin. Eluhein Hagolim. So we take the opening of all of the Prakim that we've had until now, looking at Sanhedrin and at Makot as a long, ongoing saga. So we had Elohein HaNiskalim and Elohein HaNechanakim. We had Elohein HaNisrafim. We have Elohein HaGolim. And we even have the other Elohs about the Chayvei Mitot B'dei Shamayim and so on the side. So this is using the same format as the Mishnayos that we had in Sanhedrin. And the following are the golim, even though there are no following. There's only one case. So this is the format. ahoreg nefesh bishkaga. So somebody who accidentally kills someone, and there's no gross negligence, it's only bishkaga. And that's the point. There has to be an aspect of shkaga, which means if there was no shkaga, meaning that there was no way that this could have been avoided, that's called onus. That's not included, because he's not bishkaga. If he's grossly negligent, that's also not called bishkaga. That is worse than bishkaga. So it may not be mimechavein, but it certainly is not bishkaga. So let's take the situation. And the first Mishnah tells us that the word vayapel alav that we just saw, which means that he causes it to fall on the other person, is actual the critical issue about determining, first of all, in just the case, forget about the level of the intent and avoidability, just the way in which the movements were being made, there's a difference between something that is called bishkaga and something that is called korov la'ones, or something that is called korov la'mezid. So we have different levels that we're going to be introducing over here, which goes from mezid to mechavein to korov la'mezid to a shogeg, to a korov la'ones, to an ones. And those are the different levels that we're going to have to be mechalik as we go through the perek. So a person is being ma'agel b'ma'agila. So now there's a little bit of a machlokas here about how exactly this is done. It's talking about plastering. According to Tosfos, it's actually talking about ma'agel. It's talking about a roller that is used to take the plaster that would find a stone, says Tosfos, that it can be easily rolled. It's smooth. And because of the fact that the roofs in those days were not built as the way we try to build roofs in such a way that the rain rolls off, they were built as basically flat areas where you could go up to the roof, sit in the sun, and so on. However, you needed to provide some kind of incline so that the rains wouldn't gather on the roof, which is what we do today still. And therefore, after the building was completed, they would utilize a thick plaster to make a slight incline. And the way that that was done was that, according to Tosfos, it would be rolled. According to Rashi, it would be pushed with a long board, but it was aimed downward. So if you were standing on that roof, you were attempting to roll something away from you or push something away from you on a slight incline in order to create an incline in the plaster. That means that if it falls, v'nafla alav, if it falls out of your hand and it ends up falling on a person who was walking underneath that roof and he's killed, v'nafla alav haragato, then that would be exactly what the Torah was referring to when it said, vayapel, that it's actually falling on him. Or let's take a case where a guy is trying to transfer some barrels that he's got on the top of his roof. He carefully ties them with ropes. He's lowering the barrel, and obviously he is very interested in not breaking that expensive barrel with the expensive wine. Nonetheless, it falls, v'nafla alav, it too falls out of his hand. We'll talk about later on what happens if the rope tears and so on. It falls out of his hands and it kills a person who's walking by. Or let's say a person is coming down on a ladder off of his roof. He slips. Now, he certainly did not have intent to slip and get killed himself. He slips and his body falls on the person walking beneath him. He ends up killing him. Nafal varago, it should say, not haragatu. Hare ze gole, all these cases are vayapel alav. But, imaya moshech ba'ama agila. Now let's say he was pulling up on this roof roller, or according to Rashi, on this roof smoother. And he was pulling it towards him, and as he's pulling it up towards himself, it falls out of his hand and kills the person underneath the roof. He was pulling a barrel up from the ground, and in this case, the rope broke unexpectedly. The barrel falls on someone walking beneath it, Barakatu, and kills him. Or if a person was climbing up a ladder, and he falls while he's climbing up a ladder, Hareze Nogole. In such a case, being as he was going up, that is not similar to the way the Rambam understands. We'll see it's actually Machlokas later, as the way the Rambam puts it is that, well, it's very normal for something that is headed in the direction in which gravity is pulling it, that you've got to be extra super duper careful that it shouldn't get overly accelerated by gravity because you're going in that same direction. On the other hand, if you're actually going in the opposite direction and everything that you're doing is anti-gravity, then it's unexpected that you would fall or that it would fall, and therefore that is not as chomer. Now we'll see, there's different ways of looking at it, but this is how the Rambam sees it. So in that case, he would not be good, which leads to a general rule. Zeh aklal, I should say. Kol shebederech yiridato gole, anything that was moving downward in the direction in which it was being pulled by gravity is going to make the person who allowed it to happen, and it certainly was conceivable that it would happen, he is responsible, at least to the extent of needing to go to an ir miklat. But if he was not actually moving down, then he is not considered to go into galut. How do we know such a thing? That's the pasuk that we just read. Why did the pasuk say in Maaseh that it fell on him? Because it's Achi Pol Derech Nifila. It's only when you're going downwards in that direction. Now, the fact is that the two separate words appear here in the Pasuk, both of which imply that he was not planning to do such a thing. And there's a number of different ways that the Torah refers to the not planning to do something. So we had below ra'ot. He didn't see it. It was bishkaga. It was bivli da'at. Now that bishkaga and bivli da'at are very close to each other, and yet we interpret them to be talking about not amazed when it says bishkaga, because shkaga is always contrasted to mazed, and bivli da'at is a reference to the level of intentionality. And therefore, it's prat l'mitkaven. Now, on the surface, this sounds like the same thing. But remember that mitkaven literally means, kivun means direction, aim. Then the question of mazid has to do with commitment to what you're doing, not what you're aiming to do. And therefore, we'll see that these two things are really very different. So one has to do with the direction, one has to do with the extent of the deliberation. So ask the Gemara, well, isn't it obvious that if somebody kills b'mezid, I don't need to know b'shkaga, that not mezid, because it says b'feresh in the pasuk, if the person meant to kill him, so then he's chay of misa. How could I possibly have thought that a person who kills b'mezid would be chay of golus? After all, in this same parsha, it says Beferish that he is killed. So how could it mean that? Omar Rava, I'll tell you, what it actually means is Prat La Omer Mutter. It's true that it's mazed. But what type of mazed are we talking about? It's a mazed where the person thought that it is actually allowable to kill someone. Now, that may sound weird on the surface, but there's an awful lot of people out there who believe that it's a mitzvah to kill. You've got somebody who's very ill and suffering. The kind doctor will put you out of your suffering because it's a mitzvah. So here it's telling us that if it's a murderer who never was taught that there are not cases where it's a mitzvah. So somebody's begging him to please kill me, please kill me. He thinks he's doing a mitzvah in getting rid of that person. That's an Omer Mutter, and he had no idea that this was something that was usher, and that is what it means in the pasuk to say, prat lemezid means a mezid who had full intention for killing, but he had no idea that there was anything wrong with a murder like this. Or he may believe that since this person himself is a mafioso, a danger to society, maybe he even belongs to a different shul than him. But whatever it is, it's certainly a mitzvah to get rid of him. And he was never taught that there are no cases where it's up to you to get rid of the members of the other shul. So being as there are people like that, we need a pasuk to tell me that if he honestly believed that this was mutter, and that maybe he's even doing a mitzvah, that the pasuk does not view that as being an accident. That is considered to be a mezid. Amalei Abaye, I don't understand. If he really thinks that he's doing the right thing, and he's an omer mutter, isn't that the equivalent of an onus? An onus means unavoidable. It's something that is, there's no way that he could have avoided it because he was convinced by his upbringing that this is the correct thing to do. So how can he be chayev if he never knew that it was us? Or why would we call that a mezid? We should call that an onus. And that would be bishogeg v'lo ba'onus. Said Rava, well, I disagree. I think that actually it makes a lot of sense to call it prat lemezid, because I believe that a omer mutar is karov lemezid. A person has a responsibility to find out what the nature of reality is instead of proceeding blindly in life with the kind of things that he and his society believed. That doesn't give him the right to act out in that way. He needs to actually discover on his own. And therefore, I say, if he's an omer mutar, he's not karov laonos. He is karov lemezid. Okay? And that's exactly what it is that the drasha here is teaching us from the pasuk. And the next thing, which said bivli dat, comes to tell me prat lemitkaven. Now, mitkaven, I understand. I mean, that is mezid, isn't it? Mitkaven is full intentionality, and he is aiming to kill. Mitkaven means aiming to kill. So then, barkatalahu, he is somebody that is chayev misa in bezdin. How could I possibly have thought that if not for the pasuk, I would have this guy sent to an ir miklat? That doesn't make sense to me. Amar Rabba, it means exactly what it's saying, says Rabba. It means that he is aiming and misses. So you've got an animal and a human standing next to each other. This guy is a hunter who believes he's a great shot, and he pulls the trigger and he kills the person standing next to the animal. So that is, he is mitkaven to kill, but he misses. Or the other case could be the classic hunter who mistakes the human for a deer. That was, in fact, one of the earliest cases of murder in the Torah, right? That's the Tuval Kayin case. Anyway, so that is what we're talking about. He was mitkaven. He was aiming to shoot a behemoth. It turns out he killed an Adam. He was aiming to shoot a goy, which he would not have been chayev on. Instead, he kills a Yisrael. He was aiming to kill an infant that could not survive. It's a nevo. Instead, he kills an infant that actually was full term and would have survived. So all of those cases, you might have thought that he is not intending to kill in a way that would be mechayev him, and you should go to Golos. Therefore, comes on the pasuk to tell me, no. Aiming to kill is, by definition, not able to go to the ir miklat. Okay, now we had the other pasuk. Ve'im bepeta, beloi v'hadafo, suddenly, without any history of anger between them, he ends up pushing this person or throwing something on him without being in ambush. Tana rabbana, im bepeta. That means prat lekeren zavit. So if it's something that happens suddenly, such as the person is coming towards a corner, he can't see that someone is turning the corner. He's got a knife in his hand, and he had no idea that someone was about to jump into his path from around the corner. That's one approach. That what happened is that the person from one side was capable of seeing the one who was holding the knife an instant before that person could see him. So we consider, therefore, what is the one that's at fault over here is the person who ended up not protecting himself properly. So that's Prata Karen Zavit. Below Eva, without any malicious intent, that means that if he has a history of Sin'ah, then even though we have no proof at all that this person had intended to kill him, we have to assume that there was at least a criminal negligence where he was hoping that he would end up killing the other guy. So it has to be below Eva. Hadafo, that would mean that he bumps into him, and that way he kills him. Shadir Chafo Bigufo, in that case, it's not an actual mazid, and even a body pushing with your body, a shove, in other words, is including. Dachafo Bigufo. Oh, hishlich alav. Now, we already know that, don't we? It said vayapel alav. Vayapel alav means to fall. And here he says it pushed it on him. If he pushed it on him, so then he would be pushing, again, derech nefila. Hishlich means to throw. So what is that coming to add? Ah, that is coming to add. Yirida shud sorech aliyah. What that is talking about is where you are moving down in order to kill, not in order to kill, but maybe to chop or whatever you were doing, in order to get energy to be able to go up. So you may put your, you may pull your arm up in order to be able to swing down the koach. You may be moving upwards in order to come down, but you go all the way behind your shoulder, and then you're moving down behind your shoulder, and you're killing someone behind you that you didn't realize was there. So if you are moving downwards for the purpose of aliyah, that is included in the ohishlichalav. So basically, even though what we're talking about over here is a movement that is entirely for the intent to go in the opposite direction, what's important is what the actual movement was at that time. And therefore, that would be included in Vayapelala. The Lotzidia is Prat Mitkaven Litzad Ze, Milcha Litzad Acher. The Lotzid, that is an idea, Tzad, it's a play on words, Tzidia, without going to a different side. If the actual meaning, of course, tzidia means to ambush a person. So what it means is, if the entire thing was supposed to go in a completely different direction, then, in this case, he is actually put. If it went where he wanted it to go, even though he didn't know that the person was there, then he's chayev to go into Golas. So in other words, if you would have thrown it in the opposite direction where the person is, and whatever, something bumps into it, and by some weird case, he hit the person, even though he was careful going the other direction, that is a kor of leinus. Fine. Va'asher lo tzada va'elohim. Now this, of course, was the first pasuk that we read, which was the pasuk from Mishpatim. So when it says, somebody who was not in ambush, so what is that? That is even including a case where Prat Lemitkaven Lizok Shtayim Vizarak Arba. So he had an intent to throw. However, he didn't realize how light it was, and he had put in just enough energy for it to go two amos from where he was, and instead it went four amos from where he was. Obviously, you know, it could be any amount. We're just taking these two examples. It could be he wanted to throw it 8 amos or went 16 amos, whatever. And it hit someone and killed that person. So in this case, he had no intent to throw it there. That is considered to be korov la'ones. Vasher yavo et re'ehu Bayar, and what about the posuk that we had in Shofetim? Somebody comes into the forest with his friend. Why are we talking about a forest? I mean, what's this telling a story together with the din? It's to teach me something. Just like a yar is a reshut l'nizik vilamazik l'kanes l'sham. A forest is a place where people have rights to walk into, and as Gavi will tell us, a place where you meet all kinds of interesting cows, and where you could take Oriz for walks, and anybody's allowed to go there, and it's not a problem. That is telling me that just like a yar is reshus to both people, the one who ends up killing and the one who is the victim, they both had a right to be there. Any place which gives both of them equal rights to be there, afkol reshut l'nizik l'mazik l'kanes l'sham, but we're going to see later on in a Mishnah that if a person throws something from his second story window into his front yard, and that yard was private property, nobody had a right to be there, and a guy had walked in there without announcing his presence, that in that case, it's not similar to the yar, and therefore, there would be no chiyuv. Now, fascinating question. Boy, minei Rabbi Abo, mi Rabbi Yochanan. When you are aware of Newton's basic laws, you realize that if you are climbing up a ladder, that you are actually going upwards, but that the rung of the ladder that you're pressing on must be going downwards as an equal and opposite direction. Now, that would mean that as you go up, something else is going down. Suppose the rung of the ladder falls out of the ladder and kills someone. How about then? You were going up. It was going down. What do we look at? Do we look at your going up movement, or do we look at the rung of the ladder's movement? That's a great one, right? So what would be the din? He asks Rabbi Yochanan. So haya ole b'sulam, v'nishmata shliva mitachtav, v'nefla v'harga. Mahu. Do we look at that? Ki haigavda aliyahi o yiridahi? So do we look at the way you're moving, and you are the one who's going to be responsible, but you're going up? Or do we look at it as moving down, since same way if you would have thrown a stone down on him, his body weight pushing now going up causes the shlifa to go down. Omar Lay, my dear Rabbi Abu, what you just brought up was a din that we just spoke about. Kvar la ga'ata b'yirida shuret tzorech aliyah. Remember that we just had in the list that we were marba from the actual additional idea where we had Beferish in one pasuk. We had that it was Vayapel alav. So we asked, why do we need Ohi Shlich alav? Remember just 5 minutes ago. And I explained to you that the additional meaning of Hishlich alav is to tell me that even if the movement was a movement for the purposes of Aliyah, we look at the current motion that ends up pulling this on this person's head. And we said that Yerida Shetzorach Aliyah is considered to be Derech Yerida, and that the person would be Chayev. Rabbi Abohu said, so then how do you explain the Mishnah? Ze'akla, kol shebederech Yeridato gole, shelo bederech Yeridato eno gole. Now look, we had six cases in the Mishnah. And at the end of those six cases, remember the six cases. He was rolling the thing on the roof in the direction downwards. He was lowering a chavis. He was climbing down a ladder. And then we had the mirror image of those cases. He was pulling the roller up, or he was pulling the chavis up and the rope broke, or he was climbing the ladder. Then you say, and here is the rule, and you don't add anything with that rule. You basically said what the six cases that you brought just illustrated. Going up is not chayev, and going down is chayev. So obviously it's got to be adding some extension of the din that was openly discussed in the Mishnah, right? No, I say, I mean, it only makes sense that what it's adding is, shelo b'derech yiridato adds what new idea? Clearly, lav latuya ki haigavna, isn't that the whole point? that adding to the cases is where the person who was going up ended up causing the rung of the ladder to kill somebody. And it's saying that that is called going up. That's called the Derech Aliyato. It says, Rav Yochanan, I don't understand. We've got an extra klal in both directions. One of them is Kol Shebederech Yirida, and one of them is Kol Shebederech Aliyah. Now, it's just as likely that the extra klal of Kol Shebederech Yirida To is coming to include that, no? I mean, they both have to include. That's your argument. So I can ask you, so V'taymech, Kol Shebederech Yirida To, what's that coming to add? So clearly, this is not the point. If you're going to tell me that's the point, then it contradicts itself. It's adding Yirida Letzorech Aliyah or Aliyah Letzorech Yirida in opposite ways? No. I'll tell you what that is talking about. The case in the Mishnah is talking about a butcher, which we're going to be discussing in a moment. And therefore, both parts, the first part and the second part of the klal, are coming to teach me elements about a butcher, which we're going to learn in this braita. Says Rabbi Yochanan, let me tell you, explain to you the case of a butcher. A butcher is chopping meat. So katsav shaya mikatsev, he kills somebody with his butcher cleaver. And we have four different braitot. And it's the klal of this Mishnah that is coming to clarify what appears to be impossible contradictions. One braita says, if a butcher was chopping meat and he kills someone, if it's lefanav, if it's in front of him, or he is swinging it in front of him, meaning towards the front, going downwards, then he's chayev. But if it was behind him, then he's potter. Now we have another braita that says just the opposite. If he killed someone behind him, so then he would be chayev. But if he's coming down, then he would be punter. And we got a third braita that says, doesn't matter how the guy was moving. Bein lefanav, bein laacharav, a butcher is always chayev, whether he killed someone with his cleaver in front or back. And then we've got yet a fourth braita that says, doesn't matter how he killed him, he would always be putter. Bein lefanav, bein laacharav, patur. Now, how in the world are you going to explain that? I'm saying that's the point that this Mishnah is talking about with the Zeh HaKlal, because they are all true, and it depends, basically, which part of the butcher's swing is going to kill. So remember what he usually does. You take a look at the butcher. So he takes his cleaver, starts behind his back in order to get maximum kind of energy into it, and he now goes and slams it down so that he can break through bones and so on. So then that means we have to analyze the different parts of how this goes. Obviously, he doesn't start when it's behind his back. So he starts with holding his butcher cleaver. He puts it down. Take it in your hand and see what you would do. You'd put it down first, all the way. You'd go all the way back up. So the first movement was going downwards. The next movement would be, it goes up towards your shoulder. It continues behind your back, and then it goes down. You bring it back up. It goes over your shoulder and slam it down onto the bones that you're chopping, right? So therefore, what it's coming to tell me is Zeh HaKlal, says Rabbi Yochanan. Any part of that description where the movement is going down would be Mechayev Himgolitz. Any part that is where the movement is going up, where you were going back towards your shoulder, you hadn't crossed to go down again, or when you were actually going and bringing it up from behind your shoulder, so all of those things where you're going up, those things would all not be Mechayev Yugolis. This is how Rashi understands it, and it's therefore talking about everything is defined by the actual motion of the instrument that causes the murder. And therefore, it would be completely different cases. The first braisa that says that when he's going down, he's going to be Chayev Golos. That is referring to the Yerida that's in front of him. Whereas going down behind him, that's talking about he's going back up, and going back up is not Chayev. So those are the two cases. The second brayta that says just the opposite, that going back is Mechayev and going front is not, that's talking about where you're going upwards, Shelefanav, and you're going back behind you. So there it's exactly the opposite. The third brayta says either way is Mechayev you. That's true. If you're going down in front of you, or you're going down behind you, either way, you're going down. And therefore, it's a function of the direction of the cleaver. And the last brayta that says that either way you would be putter is talking about where you're lifting your hand in front of you or where you're bringing your hand back up behind you. And those cases are abaliyah. So that means the Mishnah wants to make it clear that it's the instrument's direction that is going to be mechayev. And that is, and only that, is what we should be looking at. So is it possible that maybe it's machlokes tanoim, the point of Rabbi Abohu, that if the rung of the ladder falls on someone, that he was questioning whether this is considered to be an aliyah or yerida? Maybe it's a machlokes tanoim, because take a look at this brayta. Haya ole besulam v'nishmeta, a guy's climbing a ladder, the rung falls out, the shliva goes out from under his foot. One brayta says he's chayev, and one brayta says that he's potter, and I am assuming that's exactly the point. My lav baka miflage. One mandiyom, this is indeed a machlokes. And Marsava, the first brayta says, since it's going downwards because of Newton's laws, he has to be chayev for it because the object was going down. Whereas the other tana argues and says, but the man is going up, and therefore it's considered to be aliyah, which shows that Rabbi Abu was not far off the mark by saying that he thought it would be maybe considered to be derech aliyah. No, well, not necessarily. It's very possible that everybody would agree that, of course, the issue over here may be how the person is going. So that would mean, obviously, not like Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, we could certainly say that, according to Rabbi Abohu, it doesn't even have to be a machlokes, because everybody could say that we go according to the person, and there would be a difference between the two brayot in terms of what are we talking about. The first brayot might have been talking about a case where he caused damage, but he didn't kill anybody. So over there, it's true. The person climbing up is putter from Golas. That's true. But he would still have to pay for any damages that he caused. Because, of course, the Adam is always considered to be chayev. And we don't putter him just because it's the Korav La'onis. Hashem came the second brayta where it says that when it comes to Golas, he's putter. That's true. In terms of Golas, he's putter. Or I could say a different point. I could say maybe both brayotos are indeed talking about somebody was killed. We're talking about the Chiyuv of Golas, and it's still not Akasha. It may not be a function of Newton. Because when it comes to a Newtonian law, we do not have to note the movement. We know that there has to be an equal and opposite force. So by definition, the shliva is being pushed downwards. The question is it a measurable movement downwards? If that shliva is strong and the wood of the ladder is properly supporting it, you will not see the movement of that shliva. It will be a general force that goes into the ladder as a whole that is pushing it, so to speak, against making an indent in the dirt, whatever it is. Obviously, the force is there, but you don't see that force. If, however, we're talking about a weakened, maybe a worm, wormy kind of shliva, which I see it as he steps on it, it looks like it's sagging and about to break, there may be the difference. So the first brayta says, yes, it was actually moving downward because it was itliyah. But the second brayta says it wasn't moving downward. I don't see any kind of other force. And all that's happening is the guy is climbing upwards. Sa'ad lo itla. Or I could say another case. Maybe both cases are referring to a non-visible movement of the shliva in terms of the wood bending, but maybe there's a difference between how well the sulam was built. So the second brisa says your potter, that's talking about a well-constructed ladder where it's mihadak. So since it's attached to the ladder well, it doesn't move. But in the other brisa, it wasn't properly attached, and therefore I do see it moving downward, and it was an act, therefore, of yirida that killed. So it's possible to have this understood in many different ways. Okay, a wonderful opportunity to get our feet wet, and be careful not to slip, however, in the beginning of this wonderful new extension of Kavona and Zimama and all the things in between that and an Onus Gomer. Wishing you, meanwhile, a wonderful, happy Moadim L'Simcha until we meet again, Be'ezras Hashem, tomorrow at 9:30. Happy Yom Beit La'Omer to all. Moadim L'Simcha. Kol Tov.